and welcome into episode number 220 of the We Don't Know Either podcast. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Nick.
I'm Michael.
It's We Don't Know Either because we know nothing, as our players continuously remind me. I said that a few weeks ago or last week, whenever it was, and then had another player basically call me stupid to my face. So you guys make me feel so great, and I appreciate each and every one of you.
Well, we love you, Lindsay.
Look, every aspect of this job has its positive attributes, and that's just, you know, another one.
Okay, so why don't I start with my fact today?
Bring it.
Because I want to. So what is the official state vegetable of New Jersey?
Cheese.
No.
State vegetable, celery. I don't have any frame of reference.
Kale,
for this.
Quinoa, kimchi.
No, it's not a vegetable. That will be your hint.
I said cheese. I was closest.
You are very
closest.
You
by
are
not
closest.
Picking a vegetable.
You are. Yeah, you are correct that cheese is not a vegetable.
Tomato.
It is a tomato.
Hey, look at me.
Yes, and also in Arkansas, it's the official state fruit and state vegetable in Arkansas as well.
It's both a fruit and a vegetable.
Yeah. Well, why? Why would I ask this? Why would I find this interesting?
Because people are stupid.
I guess, yeah. Just keeping with the theme, even right. though I'm not from New Jersey. But the law defines tomato as what?
What law?
As in the U.S. Supreme Court.
U.S. Supreme
According
Court?
According to the U.S. Supreme Court, is a tomato
is
a
this
fruit
the,
or a vegetable?
The Ronald Reagan ketchup is a fruit?
This
or
is
ketchup
actually,
is a vegetable?
It's a smoothie, I think, technically, isn't it?
This is a historical precedent. So a few weeks ago, in 1893, the Supreme Court ruled
that
a tomato is a fruit or a vegetable. What did they rule?
A few weeks ago.
Sorry,
on this date in history,
yes,
kind of thing.
Okay. Yes, yes, thank you.
Not,
exactly.
Not that 1893 was a few weeks ago. Yeah. I mean, it was a couple
quite
of
a few weeks ago.
Yeah. So what? Sorry, they ruled that a tomato was a vegetable.
They did.
Yes,
and a fruit.
No, just,
no,
a,
just
vegetable.
A vegetable. Okay.
It is a fruit, but they ruled that it was a vegetable. So according to the U.S. government, a tomato is a vegetable.
Correct.
Based on an 1893 finding.
Yes, and why I found this was interesting was because you don't think about it, but there was a tariff at the time that was, you know, 10% tax on vegetables, and somebody was arguing, well, you know, tomato, it's savory, you know, and it went all the way up to the Supreme Court and hours and probably thousands of dollars of legal services arguing, and Supreme Court found that it was a vegetable because that's how people consume it and how it's sold and all of those things. And yeah, so for tariffs and other things like that, and according to the court of law, vegetable is a tomato, or a tomato is a vegetable.
All so, vegetables are now tomatoes.
So we can't really, you know, poo-poo on New Jersey for it having be the official state vegetable because...
Because the U.S. government said so? Yeah, I'm pretty sure nobody's ever poo-pooed the U.S. government for something that it did or said.
Yeah, well, so that was the Supreme Court, Horace Gray. So
all
there
right.
you go, Supreme Court Justice.
As soon as, you opened with that, my mind immediately went to the Hamilton quote, everything's legal in New Jersey.
Yeah.
it's like, okay, here we go.
Yeah, and they actually, part of the argument was that people didn't eat it as dessert. So that was one of the reasons why it was defined as a vegetable. Fruits
okay.
are well, different in the tariff
what's
world.
What's the difference between intelligence and wisdom? The intelligence is knowing that a tomato is a fruit. Wisdom is knowing not to put it in a fruit salad.
That's fair. Very fair. Okay, well, that's my fact.
All right.
All right, Michael, why don't you go?
Okay, and no connection to tomatoes at all. I actually spent last Sunday at the Udvar-Hazy Center of the Air and Space Museum out in Chantilly.
Ooh,
you know,
fun.
I have lived my entirety of my 37 years in Washington, D.C. I have never been to Udvar-Hazy.
I learned very interesting things there. I've been out here 4 years now, and I realized, you know what? I've never been. We've done these events with the Smithsonian, and I still haven't been out there.
Okay.
I've asked questions about a center I have not been to.
Right.
And it's
you knew a lot about it.
Exactly. So I went, and you get down to the main, the kind of the main floor where everything is, and the first thing you see is this giant SR-71 Blackbird.
Cool.
It's an old reconnaissance plane that they used back in the Cold War.
Yeah.
And I started reading about it, and I thought, and the thing that got me really quick, and here's my question. On its last flight in 1990, it flew from Los Angeles to here in D.C.
Okay.
How long did it take?
Oh, the SR-71?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a supersonic high-altitude plane, so it just goes like straight up and then straight back down. Wild guess, hour 30.
I have no frame of reference beside knowing that, you know, I could book a flight from here to San Fran for 4 hours, so I definitely know it's less than that.
San
Fran might be a little less.
Vegas is 4.5.
Right.
And then San Fran, isn't that 4.5?
I thought it was 6.
I can tell you commercially, as somebody that flies LA to DC at least twice a year, that's generally about 5.5 hours.
Oh, yeah. Whoa. Okay. Well, I haven't flown to California in years, but I always thought it was 4.5.
Yeah, no, 6. Yeah,
okay, my frame of reference. Go ahead, people. Yeah. Say what you want to say. Just no basic commercial airline length.
And then
and I think the Concorde...
LA to Hawaii is another 6.
Yes, that's correct.
Right.
Okay, 51 minutes.
51 minutes. By Price of Right rules, Lindsay actually is closer.
Damn. All right. Fine.
It took an hour, 4 minutes, and 20 seconds.
Oh, wow. I was super close then.
Yeah. I was 64 minutes. You said 51. That was 11. What did I say?
You said
90. I said 90. 90. So technically, Lindsay was close.
I think she's closer either way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Way.
But it averaged 2,124 miles per hour.
Right.
What?
It was.
It's a fairly quick plane,
and it even just standing still, it looks fast.
Yeah,
like it is a beautiful machine.
It's one of those planes that's like from top to bottom, it's only like 6.5 feet tall.
The bottom of it, like with up on the landing gear, little taller. But
oh yeah, but like from the belly of the plane to the peak of the cockpit is like 6 feet.
Yeah, it's a very stout plane. The thing that caught me is how long it is. You stand next to it and you don't really realize, but it's about, let me see if I have the dimensions here.
How long it was without knowing that?
I actually have the Smithsonian site here, so if anybody would have it, it's them. I don't know. It was just, it's a very long but stout kind of plane. It was really cool.
Is it one guy or is it two guys?
I believe it was
Or gals.
It was two people. The speed record was definitely set by two people. It was set by Lieutenant Colonel Ed Yielding and Lieutenant Colonel Joseph Vita.
So is that the fastest plane in the world? Or was at the time?
It's the world's fastest jet-propelled aircraft.
Right.
Oh, very cool.
It's 107 feet long.
Right.
So it's a third of the size of a football field.
Yeah, that sounds about right. It was cool to be out there, too. Like, I got to see, you know, the space shuttle that's out there. We talked about Top Gun a couple weeks ago, so I got to see one of the F-14 Tomcats that they have out there.
Right, right.
So if you get the chance, I highly recommend it.
Yeah, so the diameter of the fuselage of the SR-71 Blackbird is 5.33 feet.
Yeah.
So, like I said, it's about 6 feet tall.
Exactly.
From bottom to top, so...
This reminds me that Elon Musk just announced that they're starting to build those hyper tubes. You know what I'm talking about? That they're not trains. They're physical tubes that they're pushing people through. And they're talking about getting cross-country in. They didn't announce what times and all of those, but very,
super
very,
quick.
Very quickly.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Do you need a vehicle or is it just like Futurama where you step into
there's like seats.
I think there's got to be a pod of some sort that like.
Right.
Seats
what are those things called? The pneumatic tubes. The same tubes that run the internet.
Right.
That's where all the internet comes from.
They're saying sleek aluminum passenger pods. And it's, you know, 50 to 100 yards apart and speed surpassing that of commercial jetliners. So the capsules could move faster than 500 miles per hour. And a trip from San Fran to LA would take you about 30 minutes.
What is the G forces on that?
I don't know. But the company has a bunch of people working on it, and it's in progress. So
okay, 30 then. Minutes, San Francisco to
so
Los Angeles.
So in our lifetime, 30
That's
minutes.
Ridiculously fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what would that, if you were to go cross country, that would be New York to LA in, like an hour and a half.
Yeah,
give or take.
I'd say 2 or 3, but still.
Yeah.
Faster than anything else. Maybe even the Concorde. Which also, by the way, was also at the Uber AC Center.
Right, that one's there too. There's a lot of stuff over there. A lot of big things. Don't they also have like a giant missile in the front lobby or something like that?
They got a couple different missiles in there. I don't know if they moved the big one because of the Discovery, but...
Yeah. So
that was a cool place to just wander for. And just like the Smithsonian's here, it's free parking you got to pay for, but free to get in. Highly, highly recommended if you're a giant nerd like me.
Shocking that a museum, that Washington, D.C. offers a number of interesting museums from a historical perspective.
Right?
I know, I got to start. Once I get settled in and moved, I'm starting to cross off the list. I went to the African-American History Museum a few weeks ago and only had 45 minutes there. Just timing worked out and hopped on with a friend who was chaperoning a school trip and they had an extra ticket.
Right.
And it was incredible. I didn't even get to go downstairs at all. And it was awesome. But anyway, yeah, it's all my to-do of just going to all of these exams.
DC native, I haven't been to so many of them. It's you know, I don't want to go. Hey, we're going down to 4th of July, or we're going down to the mall for 4th of July. Screw that. I'm not doing that. That's just an awful idea. I'm not even going into the city.
We have to remember how lucky we are. I grew up an hour outside of Philadelphia and didn't see the Liberty Bell until friends from out of state in college were like, we're going. And I was like, all
right,
fine.
Right. No, exactly. I've never been to the top of the U.S., the Washington Monument.
Well, you can't now.
Wow. Yeah.
I thought they reopened it.
They closed it again.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, during Nick, that window, your fact. I went up.
All right. So my interesting fact is fountain finances.
Fountain finances.
Yes.
Okay.
That's it's a very broad subtopic.
Yeah. I would also say maybe specific, you know, in the sense of how many topics can you talk about fountains.
Right. All right. So Trevi Fountain.
Got it.
Rome. Yes. Mm-hmm. Very large fountain. You know, featured in a number of different, you know, movies and everything else. Everybody
I can actually picture that one.
Right. So, you know, everybody throws coins in the Trevi Fountain, mm-hmm. right? And the movie, I think it was called Three Pennies for Wishing, started the whole tradition of if you throw a coin in the fountain, it means you will return to Rome.
Oh, right? Really? Okay.
Yeah. So that's why, you know, tourists throw it in there and all that type of stuff.
I thought that it was just you threw it in, you made a wish.
You do throw it in and make a wish, but the
I feel like that's getting greedy.
The movie sat it as, you know, the whole premise was throwing it in means you will return to Rome.
So does that count as two wishes then?
No, I think it's just the Trevi Fountain is just the one wish. I don't think you get to have another wish.
I feel like it's the fine print. It's like you get your wish. Oh, by the way, you got to come back to Rome.
Right.
Okay.
Maybe the wish only comes true if you come back to Rome. But regardless.
I need to know the details of my wishing before I make said wish.
Absolutely. Otherwise, it's, you know, it's worthless. Why even go to Rome?
Lindsay reads the terms
and conditions. Yeah.
I do. And I get mad about it. I'm like, this is, and you can't do anything about it because I'm not going to not use.
You could not use the product.
Which I'm not going to not do. Not. But yeah, no, I skim the terms and conditions. It's like, oh, hey, here, we have access to your microphone and camera at all times.
Yeah,
no,
and that's, my phone had a line of pixels die on it. You saw the pink line that was straight up and down on the phone. And it's been like that for 4 months, and I haven't had the time to change it. So I went into the store, and they sent me a new one, and I've just been re-updating my entire phone and everything else, and all the apps are there and everything else. So they all need all new permissions and everything else. And I'm sitting there, and I'm going, why on earth does Uber need access to the microphone on my phone?
Because in case you call the driver, you don't
– That's a phone.
Uber
can connect to the phone, but they don't need to access my microphone. Why does PayPal need access to my microphone?
That's a fair point.
Right? Isn't that a weird thing for PayPal to ask?
Have you ever asked you don't have an Echo Dot, do you? Or an Amazon Echo Dot?
Not a Dot. I have a full one.
Okay. Have you ever asked it if it's spying on you for the CIA?
I have not.
It shuts down when you ask.
Really?
It doesn't answer the question.
Yeah. No,
I've tried it. It's scary.
I have noticed recently that the green ring that it's listening to you goes off like at a drop of a hair at this point. It's different from it was a couple months ago. But anyway, my fact. Yeah, Trevi Fountain.
Oh, wait, hang on real quick.
Yeah.
So in regards to terms and conditions, they did a year ago, a guy at an Ivy League did some research about how many people read the terms and conditions. And so he was saying that it would take the average user 40 minutes a day to read all of, and that's every day to read all of the privacy terms of service policies we encounter related to the different services we're using all the time. So it would add an average 40 minutes a day if you actually read every single terms and conditions. And when I say I read them, I just kind of skim through them.
Yeah. That's that. I don't even bother reading it because if I don't read it, then it's not liable. It's not enforceable.
I don't think that's how it works.
Actually, I'm pretty sure.
I think it might be.
But like if you read it, you're screwed.
But now you're.
Oh, I'm agreeing to something, but I didn't read it.
Yeah, but when you agree to it, that's saying that you read it. That's why the checkbox says, I have read.
I read and understand.
So you've forfeited your right to argue because you've just, by clicking that, you're saying that you have read it.
Yep.
Right. It's like, how drunk can you be when you sign it?
Welcome to the United States. It's a litigious country.
How drunk can you be when you sign a contract kind of thing?
Right. Yeah. Where's the line? There's a line somewhere.
I had a friend meet at the bar and he's like, I got to go. My real estate agent's picking me up. We're closing on a house. And I was like, are you sure you're allowed to do that? You're a couple beers in, man. He's like, I don't know.
Well, if you're going to drop that kind of money, I think it helps to be a little drunk.
I guess so. Yeah. Who knows? I was like, I'm not a witness to this.
Anyway, fountain economics.
Yeah. Fountain economics. So the Trevi Fountain, and this is the church.
Right.
Collects all the money out of the Trevi Fountain and donates it to charity.
Right.
The last time they...
Do they donate to Make-A-Wish?
They do not donate.
Oh, God. that one took me a second, but who just...
Oh, man. All right. How... this is 2011. How much money was taken out of the fountain in 2011?
So just for the year.
Just for the year, to calendar year 2011.
I mean,
it's a big fountain.
It's a big fountain. I'm starting to do the math in my head. It's like, okay, how many tours do I think they get? Let's assume a 50-cent piece goes in every time.
Sure.
Because, you know, European money.
Is this adjusted for inflation? No, kidding.
Yeah. I already did the conversion into dollars, so you don't have to worry about the type of currency that goes in.
That was also my next question. It's like, I have no...
I'm sure it's lots of different types of currency.
$4 million.
Lindsay?
Okay, well, I'm thinking US. Back to 2011. That's when Osama was killed. Other things that happened in 2011.
Yeah, somebody did die in 2011.
Yeah. Yeah, but otherwise it was
But that other person was born.
Boring year. That is obviously not helpful at all.
No.
But I really was trying to think about what happened in 2011. Not a ton of historical events. Not that that would affect any wishes in the fountain. Unless you wished for Osama being killed. Then your wish got granted.
Then you're good to go, yeah.
I think upswing of the economy means more people are traveling.
Sure.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that makes sense. That sounded very condescending, and I didn't mean it to be.
No, it's fine.
Okay, so you said $4 million.
Yep.
I said $4 million.
I think it's more than that. And I'm going to go $12.5
million. Oh, you shouldn't have done the decimal point.
Really? Was it 12?
No, you weren't even close.
Dang it.
$953,689.94.
So just under $1 million.
Just under $1 million.
Oh, well, that is meh.
Meh. It's $1 million pulled out of
one year.
Penny fountain.
Yeah, but people throw like full coins in there, and
yeah,
I mean they have dollar. That's a big thing in Europe. Is they have the dollar and $2 coins.
Euro, right. I think is
in Europe. I said
no, I know, but it's not a dollar. It's a euro.
That's what I.
It's a 1 euro coin.
That's I understand that.
Yes.
That's what I
yeah,
I
yeah.
know my brain is saying that. You know what I mean.
Yes.
Whatever her name was, Sharon. No, I'm kidding. I don't know why I said that. I have a friend named Sharon. She's great.
I also have another interesting fact if you want to throw that in there.
Bonus Go for
interesting
it.
Fact.
Bonus interesting
which,
fact.
Which should be right up your alley.
Okay.
All right.
Oh, you right up my alley.
It is bowling related.
I love bowling. We know
you
that.
See, I can do the puns just as well as Lindsay.
And I can roll my eyes in the exact same way.
All right. So you were a collegiate bowler.
I was not. I did club bowling in college. Yes. Okay. And then I was varsity in high school.
All right. So you were a varsity bowler.
Yeah.
In high school, you guys had a bowling team, like an actual sport?
Yes, it is an actual sport, and I was 4-year varsity letterman, captain for 3 years. But you know, it's whatever.
I didn't realize that was a sport on the East Coast.
Yeah, it's pretty big. We had varsity letters and everything. And my senior year, I think the bowling team was the only one to actually go to states, which the athletic banquet forgot to recognize. But you know, who pitched a fit about it? I did. Anyway.
All right. So here is my question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you were pretty good at it.
I did.
Did
I was.
You ever have a 300 game?
I did, yeah.
Do you have any idea how long it took you to bowl that 300 game?
I don't. Because normally it's 5v5.
Right, so everybody goes and then you switch
games,
lanes.
Yeah, yeah.
And
you know, a match would take like two and a half hours. But it was only me and a couple other people for like a league pre-roll.
Right.
So, I mean, probably 20 minutes.
20 minutes? Okay.
Yeah.
What do you think the record is for the fastest 300 game?
Fastest 300 game. Whew. Is he on one lanes or two? Because that, you know, you're going back and forth, and you got to figure at least 45 seconds for the ball to come back up the return.
All excellent questions. He's on 12 lanes.
Yeah, that was immediately what I was thinking.
He's on 12 lanes?
He's on 12. My guess is he's on 12 lanes with 12 balls. Roll next.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow. I'm going to say 45 seconds.
Okay.
I'm going to say... It's got to be over a minute.
The clock stops as soon as the 12th ball is released.
Oh,
not when the last pin goes down.
I think it should be when the last pin goes
Agreed.
Down. Because you don't know, boo that record keeping. I'm going to say 80 seconds, 90 seconds?
86.9 seconds is the fastest ever.
That's pretty close to dead on the money right
now.
Wow,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Where was it at?
This was at, I think it was a place down in Florida.
Florida, cool.
Where the guy said it. And yeah, it was 23-year-old two-handed bowler.
Ugh.
So it was the, obviously his form apparently wasn't great, but you can't tell the man he's doing it wrong.
No, two-handed bowling is now a big thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's a big Australian guy that's like very big in the PBA that uses two hands, and a lot of people are angry about it.
April 21st of 2017.
Oh, wow, cool.
Is when he did it. So.
Yeah. My a lot of people... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
My immediate reaction to that is the scorecard doesn't have pictures.
Scorecard does not have pictures, but the video of him doing it is going to be posted on the site for this podcast.
That's incredible to me because there's so many bowling is much like golf or any little nitty thing that if you just turn your hand the wrong way or it hits a certain spot that's drier or more oil on the lanes,
right?
It just boop and ball can just do something weird and one of the pins, because the pins are actually spread out pretty farther than what you think and what you're looking
on
straight
on. If you're standing there, they're like 10 or
it's like
8
almost
to 10
a foot,
apart.
I think,
yeah.
I don't know the exact amount, but it's farther than you'd think. So just a little bit off and you're done. And for him to do that quickly, does it say how many attempts that he had prior?
It does not say how many times it took him to get to that 90-second window that worked. No.
I always wonder like when there's those trick shot videos.
He was doing it for 45 minutes and that was his 73rd attempt or whatever it is.
Right.
Yeah.
I had a friend of mine who was a college punter at, I want to say one of the Iowa schools, I could be mistaken, but they had him punt up into the center screen at the stadium, and there was a basket on the corner. And he punted, he hits it, looks back at the camera, hits his line, and walks away, and it was kind of the preseason, like, get on board kind of thing.
Right.
I asked him, he's like, how many times did I really tell you? He's like, honest to God, I hit it on the second time.
Right, yes. Yeah,
and then I completely screwed up my line.
Yeah. That absolutely happens. The so here's an even more interesting thing. What is the record for most strikes in a 60-second period?
Oh, wow.
And this is an official Guinness World Record. This one's from Guinness.
So, okay. So they don't have to necessarily be in order, right? They could go strike nine, strike.
Exactly.
Wow. I would have no... You got to figure is this counting?
Again, the guy who said it at an alley that, it, according to the video, looks like it has 30 lanes on it.
So he went from one to one to one to one.
So, yes. And he had 30 balls lined up and he had 30 people holding the balls like at waist height. So
he would
grab, take three steps, throw, move over, grab, take three steps, throw. There was like 20 people that helped him do it.
An interesting three-step approach.
Yeah.
Most bowlers use a four or five step.
True, but when you're trying to beat a time frame rather than a score, you need to shorten that walk up.
Huh. Okay, so I still, so 60 seconds.
Would be almost... is 26.9 seconds faster than the perfect game. Fastest perfect game.
I would think that one strike every 2 seconds, like 30 strikes would be, but that seems low now that I'm thinking about it. So I'm going to say 40.
Do you think it's low? 40 strikes in 60 seconds?
I'm going
I 30 strikes in 60 seconds.
Even that, that's a strike every 2 seconds. Can you take three steps in 2 seconds?
I don't think so. I mean, I feel like 3 steps in 2 seconds would be a right estimate if I were going to guess how long seconds.
True, but then you
got
to transfer over to the next person with the next ball.
I was going to say, yeah, I was going to say maybe 15 tops.
Okay.
I'll stick with 27.
Okay. The most strikes in the 60-second period is 12.
Oh, 12. Okay.
12
so perfect.
Strikes in a 60-second period. Not a perfect game.
Not a perfect game, yeah.
Yeah. So that was the distinction. And that's what I spent 20 minutes before the podcast trying to figure out how the Guinness World Record was 12, and yet it wasn't the fastest perfect game. That's why. It's because it wasn't 12 in a row. It was 12 in 60 seconds.
That's awesome. One of the kids in my county had the world record for most 300s bowled as a youth bowler, which is pretty cool.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think what we should do now is we should end the podcast, mm-hmm. and we should go across the street to the bowling alley and see if Lindsay can break the record.
I'm in.
I don't have my shoes or my ball with me, and I haven't gone bowling in a few years, but I'm definitely game.
All right. So, stay tuned for the next podcast. We'll let you know how Lindsay does.
Get our iPhone videos.
Yeah, right. Yeah. The secret phrase today, by the way, said by Nick, and your pun. I'm feeling generous. I'll let your pun win.
Right up your alley. Yeah.
Yep. All right. Right up your alley is your secret phrase. But yeah, this has been the We Don't Know Either podcast. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Nick.
I'm Michael.
We don't know either.
Bye.
Thank you.